This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming today, legendary political consultant Ray Strother on the politics of gun control and actions Congress may or may not take in light of the tragedy in Florida, which left 7 people dead last Wednesday. We'll talk with Ray Strother about this on the 13-month anniversary of the presidency of Donald Trump. We're in day 397 of the Trump term, and we'll talk with Ray Strother about the viability of the president moving forward as well. Chrissy Gregg of the World War II Museum in New Orleans on African-American contributions to the war, and former Vanderbilt basketball great Bob Dudley Smith on a memorable fight he had with former LSU coach Dale Brown 44 years ago on the court in Baton Rouge. Smith got arrested. He's back tonight as Vanderbilt plays LSU, and there'll be a reunion with the coach and Bob Dudley Smith. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Locally, it's 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, and you can send us an email at talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin with the legendary political consultant, Ray Strother, former editor of the Reveille, spent many years in Baton Rouge before moving to Washington in the early 1980s, and at that time, he was one of only a few political consultants in the Beltway. Today, there are thousands of them. And the big issue of the week is gun regulation, prompted by last Wednesday's shooting in Florida, which left 17 people dead, including 14 young students at a school in Parkland, Florida. This is something that's happening far too often in our country, and there is a story today that President Trump is open to backing a bill to alter gun background checks. What kind of legislation is needed? Our junior U.S. Senator John Neely Kennedy says we don't need gun control, we need idiot control. Ray Strother, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How do you see this issue permeating right now? Is there a movement that will make a change, or is it just more of the same?
I hate to say, I think it's just more of the same. It'll bloom, and there'll be incremental things done or very tiny things done. Maybe there'll be some adjustments in the background check. Maybe people who are on the no-fly list will not be able to buy a gun legally. But there won't be any major changes.
Well, yesterday there was a lie-in near the White House, you can see hundreds of people there. The president himself in his 2000 book, The America We Deserve, says he's in favor of a ban on assault weapons. This is the president 18 years ago and a slightly longer waiting period to purchase a gun. But then the NRA spent $30 million on his campaign, and the president said, you came through big for me, and I'm going to come through big for you. So is it difficult to get anything done when there is a president who is against any kind of new gun regulation?
Yeah, it's very difficult, but also each member has the same problem. A lot of them are cowards. They're afraid to do anything. They're afraid of re-election. They're afraid of people raising money and against them and sending out petitions against them. So it isn't just the president, although he needs some more clarity on this. It goes right down to the House members and the senators.
Well, last year, Ray Strother, the president signed a measure into law almost a year ago to this day that rescinded an Obama-era rule aimed at blocking gun sales to certain mentally ill people. The Senate passed the bill 5743. That was including John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy in the 57 who voted for this, basically allowing more access to firearms for those who were mentally ill. And this young man who killed these people last week does have mental ill issues, and he did so when he was firing away in Parkland, Florida. But is there any way to combat somebody like this?
I think there is. I think one thing we do is raise the limit, the age limit. You can drink whiskey at age 21. Maybe you should not buy an AR-15 till you're 21. I think that might help. There are things like that one can do. This is a gun culture. America's a gun culture. We're not going to be like Australia. We're not going to do away with all the firearms. It seems foolish to think that. But we need to do something that moderates their use. For example, if you go to Newtown or the Florida shooting or the Columbine shooting, those were all done by people who hadn't owned those guns a long time. They went out and bought them to do the job, to do the killing. And so had these laws been in effect, maybe just the age limit, if nothing else, and maybe some other minor things, those could have been avoided.
Well, it doesn't seem like the movement is directed toward any kind of more gun regulation in many parts of the country, including the one I'm in and the one where you are right now in Montana. And this is an issue that the red states and the blue states are pretty much divided upon. Is there any consensus on some kind of minor changes that would be a step in the right direction?
Yeah, there's some things that everyone agrees on around the fringes, but they're afraid of the NRA, like mental health, like spousal abuse, age limits. There are some things, the don't fly list. There are some things that can be done. They lack the moral courage to do it, but the American public is in favor of these things. And if the American public makes itself known, they can affect the Congress and they can change laws. Let me tell you a funny story. I was trout fishing in Wyoming, Pinedale, Wyoming, with a local guy in Baton Rouge named Tommy Hudson. And there, we walked into a saloon, and there was a big sign, "Leave no guns inside. And so I asked the bartender about it. He said, "Well, I'm taking that sign down." I said, "Why? You're going to let people bring guns?" He said, "No, we passed a state law that you can bring guns anywhere you want to now." I said, "Well, you don't mind them bringing guns in?" He said, "What do you want to do, leave them on the sidewalk?" Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the attitude here in Montana and Wyoming.
877-217-5757 to talk with Ray Strother, who's handled many a candidate who had to wrestle with this issue. And in Louisiana, there's only one Democrat elected to statewide office, and John Bel Edwards opened a special session yesterday, and he mentioned the tragedy in Florida, but John Bel Edwards is in accord with most of the gun rights supporters on gun issues. Doug on Highland Road. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, good morning. As Mr. Strother mentioned, it is amazing the power that the NRA holds over much of the Congress. And the things that folks, their attention gets diverted. The bump stock legislation after the Las Vegas shooting incident, which everyone thought could pass, couldn't even come to a vote. The mental health check, background check that they're bringing up now was supposed to be brought up after a previous shooting. It couldn't come to a vote. They have a lock hold on it, and people are going to need to go after the NRA as an enemy of our safety because they're the ones who are running things.
You're a good friend with Wayne LaPierre, Ray Strother, and I say where the NRA in the last decade has contributed $2.8 million to our senior senator, Bill Cassidy. Wayne LaPierre is a force to be reckoned with.
I've known Wayne for decades. The thing that people don't know about Wayne, he's a Democrat. He's a registered Democrat. And I think I've heard him tell that to other people, so I'm not letting anything out of the bag. But your caller just said something interesting that I think really puts in perspective. He talked about bump stocks. Bump stock is a piece of plastic. I mean, it's basically a piece of plastic. How could anyone object to banning bump stocks? Yet they did. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't let it come up for a vote.
Well, we move from tragedy to tragedy, and it seems like there might be a week of news, and then it goes away, and then it comes back, and then it goes away. At what point do we say enough?
Well, the voters do that. They do that on occasion. And I think we're going to see voters saying enough right now, probably not over guns as much as the Russia investigation and some other cultural and social problems. But I think at midterm elections, we're going to see some sanity return to the country. Right now, what you have is all three, you have the House, the Senate, and the presidency all controlled by one party. And that's never been good for America. We need some balance.
Jim on Jones Creek. Hi, Jim. You're on Talk Louisiana with Ray Strother.
Yeah, gentlemen. The first thing we need to start doing on the media side is that y'all need to stop calling them the NRA and call them the gun lobby, because that's what they are. They're K Street lobbyists. who have exactly one single function, and that is to promote gun sales. They don't care about your rights. They don't care about your kids. They don't care about you. They care about selling guns. That's what they're there for. So we need to do that, and we need to start realizing that when the NRA puts a rubber stamp on a politician, it's just like a cattleman putting a brand on a cattle, saying, I own you.
All right, Ray. Is there some validity amid what some might say some hyperbole there from Jim on Jones Creek?
Well, I don't know if that's hyperbole or not. The NRA is the gun lobby. I mean, that's it. And their sole purpose is to sell guns. They keep using the flag and the Constitution as a shield. But they're sponsored and paid for by the gun manufacturers who sell a lot of guns in this country. As a matter of fact, just the talk of these of any gun legislation will make gun sales soar. It's happened after every massacre, after Newtown, after Columbine. Gun sales went up, not down. But it's NRA's job, and they do it very well, to sell guns.
In fact, guns were selling a lot better when President Obama was in office than with President Trump, because
absolutely
under Trump, it appears that there will be very little movement toward any kind of new gun regulation. Senator John Kennedy says we need idiot control, not gun control. What do you think? We'll talk more with Ray Strother. 877-217-5757 is your number, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Sasha Gabalshaw producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. We're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Ray Strother is with us, the veteran and legendary political consultant who's handled candidates in all parts of the country and in different parts of the country. As we know, we have, as a majority, different opinions about gun regulation. There is some movement that is coming in places not expected. Bret Stephens, a conservative columnist for the New York Times, formerly with the Wall Street Journal, in today's issue of the newspaper of record, he said, had Wednesday's massacre of 17 people at a Florida high school been different in one respect, that is, had alleged perpetrator Nicholas Cruz shouted Allahu Akbar during the course of his rampage, conservatives would be demanding another round of get tough measures. And Stevens continues saying there's a good case to be made for owning a handgun for self-defense or a rifle for hunting. There is no remotely sane case, writes Stevens, for being allowed to purchase, as the Las Vegas shooter did, 33 firearms in the space of a year. But that change can't happen without a constitutional fix. Anything less does little more than treat the symptoms of the disease. He actually wants to change the Second Amendment, Ray Strother. I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon, but at least the conversation is starting about where do we go from here. As a civilized society, can we continue to be a beacon of light for the rest of the world when we're having this kind of carnage in our communities all across America?
No, we can't be a beacon of hope. I travel a lot, and I'm in Europe a lot, two or three times a year. And most of the time, people, one thing they want to talk about always at a dinner party is how Americans allow so many guns in circulation. They really don't understand that. In the last year, most of the people I know, they'll come up and they'll say, I'm so sorry for you. They're talking about Trump. They're apologizing or giving me sympathy because of our president. So I think we're losing our moral authority around the world right now, and guns are just a part of it.
877-217-5757 or 297-5633 for Ray Strother. John on Highland Road. John, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Yeah, I just wanted to comment about that too. I think it needs to be a comprehensive approach, and no party, which I'm not affiliated with any of them. I'm an independent, but I'm a gun advocate for sure. But I don't think the problem, every time it's addressed, is when a horrific incident occurs. You know, more teens are killed by texting, but we don't see marches on that. We don't see people protesting and raising a bunch of things about that. But
all right, you're saying more teens are killed by texting than by guns?
No, than by these horrific incidents. No, handguns by for sure kill more people than texting. But the point I'm making with that is thousands of kids being killed through texting and driving. But we don't see near the drive from any of that. It's a comprehensive approach. It's not just one thing, gun control, which a lot of people have brought up the point that NRA members, which I'm not a fan of them either, but I think that they have their place.
All right. What about those who say cars are just as dangerous or more so than guns, Ray Strother? Your answer.
Well, I was at a meeting one time. I represented a large communications company, and Peter Hart, the great American pollster, was telling them that this was about cell phones. He said, we're one school bus accident away from a national revolution to control the use of cell phones in cars. Well, he was making a point, but he's right. Things are happening, like in this state of Montana. There's no major city in Montana, although we don't have major cities, but there's no city in Montana where you can drive and talk on the phone at the same time. And people get arrested for having a phone at their ear as they drive down the street. So it is beginning to have an effect. It's about critical mass. And if we would think that we'd reached a critical mass many, many times, particularly Newtown with these infants being shot, these very, very young children being shot. But maybe this is a critical mass. Maybe we finally reached it in Florida. I'm not sure. But things are going to change only when the public demands that they change. This is still a democracy.
Still time to talk with Ray Strother, 877-217-5757. John and Lutcher. Hello, John. You're on the air with Ray Strother.
Yeah, I'm not an NRA member or anything. I'm a person. My job is to analyze environmental data, you know, multivariable analysis and all that. And it's almost like a hobby with me. I like to look at issues and analyze data. And I really do believe, and, you know, guns are an effective tool. So intuitively, you know, they're going to have an effect. But when you actually look at the data, there's a lot of, I think, deceptive use of statistics that goes on. Like, for instance, where you hear people say the United States has the highest firearms death rate among developed nations and has the highest. I don't think that's a valid way to look at it. If you say that, if you pick homicide, the United States does not have the highest homicide rate among what the UN defines as developed nations.
Who does then?
It's like Latvia or something like
well,
that.
Okay,
but here's the other thing too. Here's the other thing too, though. Like, if you look at a correlation, okay, which is the way to look at it comprehensively, there is a highly significant correlation between gun-related homicides and gun ownership rates. But there is not a significant correlation between homicides overall.
All right. Well, Louisiana, John, has the highest gun homicide rate among children of any state in the country. Louisiana has the worst gun murder rate in the nation, 9.5 murders per 100,000 people each year, more than 2.5 times higher than the national average of 3.6 murders per 100,000 people. And more than one person is murdered with a gun in Louisiana every day. From 2001 to 2010, going back a little ways, 4,519 people were murdered by guns in our state, 4,519, more than 1,000 more than all U.S. combat deaths during the Iraq War. And yet we treasure our guns. And some say this is a constitutional right, and I think it is. And I don't think there – I know it is. But is it a constitutional right to be allowed to carry an assault weapon? Ray Strother, these weapons were banned for a decade, and yet these are the weapons that were being used in Newtown and in Parkland and in other places and in Las Vegas. So would it make sense to get those out of the hands of people? These are weapons meant for warfare, not for recreation.
Yeah, I think that's the most valid argument yet that I can see the public really getting behind, is doing away with the sale of assault weapons, not the confiscation of assault weapons already sold. But as I said earlier, this kid that murdered the 17 people in Florida, he had just bought that weapon. It wasn't a weapon that his had inherited from his father or anything. So if he had not been able to go out and buy that weapon, I think we probably could have avoided that massacre. So we have to have some common sense. That yeah, can't we do away with the AR-15? It seems reasonable to me, but you know, I'm not a hunter. I used to be. I used to hunt ducks when I lived in Louisiana, of course. But I don't know, and I know a lot of hunters in Montana. This is a hunting state. I have 125 elk that come through my backyard twice a year going to and from the mountain. But they don't hunt with AR-15s. They hunt with, most of the good ones hunt with single-shot rifles. Single-shot rifles. They said, we don't need more than one shot. If we need more than one shot, you know, they want to give the animals an even shot. Well, an AR-15 would punch holes in an animal from the tail to the head because you can't even aim it that accurately, as they tell me. I do not know. I've never handled one, never felt one, and never shot one.
Brandon in Lafayette. Brandon, please be brief. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi. I always think it's really disingenuous when somebody compares guns to cars, because we regulate cars with a mandatory licensing, a mandatory registry, a mandatory insurance carrying, and in the state of Louisiana, a mandatory inspection. So I just if they are just as dangerous, perhaps we should be regulating the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon. 877-217-5757. We'll continue for a bit more with Ray Strother right here on Talk Louisiana. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. We're back after this break for the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Sasha Gabashaw is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. You can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. The Center for American Progress has a list of the most violent states in America based on gun violence. And just reading the top 10 states are Louisiana number one, Alaska two, Alabama three, then Arizona, Mississippi, South Carolina, New Mexico, Missouri, Arkansas, and then I could, and Georgia is number 10. Ray Strother, the top 10 states, I'm looking at those 10, and they have something in common. Every one of them voted for Donald Trump. Every one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they're the 10 most violent states in America when it comes to guns.
Yeah, it's a stretch to say that if you voted for Donald Trump, you're for gun violence. I wouldn't go that far.
I didn't say that. But
No, I know. But these are conservative states. These are very conservative states. And conservative states tend to be more knee-jerk on gun issues. I don't know. I don't know the correlation there. I would have trouble with that. You had a man on recently, a few minutes ago, talk about statistics. And statistics are great, but you can bend and shape those any way you want. And maybe statistics like this is something you'd have to give some thought to. I know the president takes statistics that seem damning to him and turns around and puts out a tweet, says, look, what a wonderful thing has happened. My popularity is up to 39%. So it depends on how one looks at it.
Well, and a listener asks about the least, if there is any such thing as a least violent state in America. The five states with the least number of gun violence outcomes are Hawaii, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York. All five of those states voted the other way, not for President Trump in 2016. David in Atlanta.
But I think they also have gun control laws, don't they?
Well,
all of
so
those, New York, Connecticut,
New
York, Hawaii.
Yeah, well, yeah. David in Atlanta, you're on with Ray Strother.
You know, to show you the insanity of everybody having these concealed weapons, in Atlanta yesterday, a man got into an argument with an Uber driver. A gunfight broke out. One guy is dead. Another guy is going to probably be charged for murder over probably an insignificant argument. If people have guns, they'll find a reason to use it. And it's insanity not to have universal background checks. And to show you the strength of the NRA, Steve Scalise, who nearly lost his life, that warfare battlefield weapon was purchased without a background check. Had that person undergone a background check because he had a history of domestic violence, he would not have been able to purchase that weapon. And background checks, true, won't stop all crazy people from obtaining weapons. But in Flint, Michigan, a few months ago, a terrorist tried to buy a weapon. He was refused because he couldn't pass a background check. He went to the Flint Airport and used a knife. Now, some people were injured, but thank the Lord above, he didn't have an AR-15 with a 50-round magazine where he could have probably killed 50 people. So background checks can minimize the violence, and anyone who opposes that, the next life that's saved, I wonder if it would be a friend or relative or themselves. If that life is saved, how would they feel about it?
He gave you a lot to work with, Ray Strother, but people like David are fired up. That was an eloquent statement.
Yeah, that's an eloquent statement. I can't think of anything to argue with there.
Well,
background checks need to be more stringent and enforced. We have some background checks that aren't enforced now. They should be enforced. There should be communication between various agencies, welfare agencies, various social organizations. So if there's a spousal abuser, they need to be reported because these are people with pent-up anger, and these are the people who pick up guns and kill people. This gentleman from Georgia is completely correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Trump administration is now 13 months old. He's in day 397 as is our president. And in some parts of the country, he remains, if polls are accurate, relatively popular, our state being one. But in other parts, it shows that if the election were held in some of these states that went closely for him, he would be in a world of hurt right now. How do you see him? First of all, do you think he'll survive his term? And secondly, do you see him as a viable candidate for reelection as the last three presidents of the United States were? Remember, the last three presidents, Clinton, Bush, and Obama, all served 8 years. Are we headed for 8 years with Donald Trump?
We could be. But I think the dominoes are beginning to fall with the Mueller investigation. And I think we've seen just the beginning of this. All the roads seem to be leading to some kind of collusion between, if not Trump personally, people very close to him in the administration and the Russians. See, there's one curious thing, and I noticed the weekend tweets. I'm very amused by the president's weekend tweets. When he gets away by himself, he does a lot of tweeting, and he criticized, he blamed Obama, he blamed Clinton. He blamed everyone, but he never blames Putin for anything. He's a great defender of Putin. And it makes me wonder, why? I mean, what does Putin have on him that's so terrible? Well, if we find out, maybe he will be a one-term president.
Well, Ray Strother, it is always a pleasure to talk with you, and I'm sure we'll be calling again soon. People are passionate on both sides, and most people call today for some kind of gun regulation in light of this. Charles Meyer writes, what do you guys think the first half of the Second Amendment means? There are people who believe that the Second Amendment means there should be no infringement at all on our capacity as citizens to have any kind of weapons we want, whether it's a cannon or an Uzi or you name it. We should be able to acquire whatever weapon we have at our disposal. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, should we have unregulated use of hand grenades? I remember one time when I was a little small child, right after World War II, I had a cousin named Murphy who came back from Iwo Jima or someplace, and he had smuggled back in this country a machine gun. They called them Tommy guns at the time. Had a round cylinder, would fire a lot of rounds, and he took us out in the forest in North Louisiana, and they shot a whole cylinder of these things. Well, those guns were against the law and still are against the law. Where do we draw the line? They were against the law because Al Capone and the gangsters used them, and the public reached a critical point where they didn't want machine guns or Tommy guns, as they called them at the time, around. When do we reach that point with AR-15s?
Thank you, Ray Strother. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
See you soon. We're joined now by Chrissy Gregg from the World War II Museum in New Orleans, and there is a major event scheduled for Thursday, and we will talk about it, but it is an electronic field trip exploring African-American experiences in World War II. And Chrissy Gregg, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Well, there are those who are probably unaware that African-Americans did fight for this country in World War II. Many did, and the World War II Museum, as it should, is telling their stories.
Yeah, of course. So during World War II, over 2.5 million African Americans registered for the draft, and over 1 million served. But, of course, the military was completely segregated at the time. So we're telling, of course, the story of the battlefronts during the war, but we're also in this electronic field trip for students talking about the home front, so what was going on here in the United States in defense factories, building tanks and ships and planes, and what that meant for African Americans here stateside as well.
Well, this Thursday, this will happen, and tell us about this live web-based program that will examine racial segregation and discrimination that many African Americans faced during World War II.
Sure. So actually, this is a webcast that's created for students and teachers in grades 6 through 12. And it's as simple as registering on our website, and you get a link to view. So there's no special technology required to tune into the program. But as I said, we will be covering both home front stories and battle front stories. And so there's going to be special opportunities for students and teachers to get a glimpse into the museum, so to see exhibits and artifacts related to the story, but also to hear important personal testimony. So we actually have two student reporters, and one of them interviews a Tuskegee Airman named George Hardy, and another student reporter interviews Betty Reed Soskin, who's the oldest active National Park Service ranger, and she actually worked for a segregated Boilermakers Union during World War II. So it's students, you know, bringing other students these firsthand accounts, so we hope that it's a powerful experience that teachers and students can watch in their classroom.
It's a 50-minute program, Fighting for the Right to Fight, African-American Experiences in World War II, taking place at 9 and at noon, and this will be featured in classrooms across the country, correct?
Exactly. Of course, you know, we students all across Louisiana can watch, even students that are kind of around the corner here from the museum in New Orleans. But, yeah, this is a program that is for students all across the country. The neat thing is, of course, they'll see the museum here in New Orleans, but students will also be able to travel with a student reporter out to California. We film at two National Park Service sites out in California, too. So it's really a cross-country journey in 50 minutes.
And a listener asked if this will be available for the public to view at some point.
Yes. So it's something that actually you don't have to be a teacher or student to watch with us live. It'll be streamed right on the museum's website. It'll also be immediately archived, and so you can really view it at any point. So it's something that, yeah, as long as you know that it's for teachers and students, that you can definitely participate and view. Another kind of neat thing about it, too, is that there will be some interactive elements. So we'll be doing live polling and Q&A with our senior historian, Dr. Rob Satino. So students will get to ask questions live, too, which is always fun.
Well, the National World War II Museum in New Orleans tells the story of the American experience in the war that changed the world, and a million African Americans contributed to the change and the victory, and this is an important contribution, and it will take place this Thursday, 9 a.m. and noon, and we can watch it if we wish. Hopefully at noon rather than 9. Hopefully you'll be listening to this show. But at noon on the National World War II Museum website. Thank you so much, Chrissy Gregg.
Great. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Take care. And coming next, 44 years ago, LSU and Vanderbilt played in Baton Rouge, and there was a fight on the court. It started with Jan Van Bredekoff and Collis Temple, and it ended with Dale Brown, the coach, fighting a former player for Vanderbilt, Bob Dudley Smith. We'll hear from him after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster, and joining us now is Bob Dudley Smith. He's a member of the Tennessee Athletic Hall of Fame, a former Vanderbilt basketball stalwart, and a man who 44 years ago got into a fracas with the LSU basketball coach Dale Duard Brown. At this time, Bob Dudley Smith was a civilian. He'd already quit playing for the Commodores, but the Vanderbilt team at that time was ranked fifth in the nation, and in a heated game with LSU, and a fight breaks out, and boom, this guy comes out of the stands, Bob Dudley Smith. What happened on that eventful day?
Well, Jim, I can almost express that that happened yesterday. I was in New Orleans, and this member of the Board of Trust of Vanderbilt, John Johnson from Houston, Texas, met me, and he said, Bob, are you going to the Vandy LSU game Monday night? And I said, well, I understand it's a sellout. He said, "Oh, call Roy Skinner, and I'm going to pick you up at the Rosette Hotel, 4 o'clock Monday. I want you there." So I tried to get Roy for 2 days. Finally, I told the operator, I said, "Get me Paul Eales. He's the announcer for Vanderbilt." So sure enough, Paul answered the phone, and I told him the circumstance. Oh, he said, "Oh, Bob, you just go to the will call, and I'll leave a ticket for you." So sure enough, John Johnson comes by and picks me up. We go to the game. I go to the will call, and then I am heading toward on the court. The press is right on the court. We're about to maybe say like on a football field about the 15-yard line. Well, the game was very close for a while, but then too, I think LSU went out to about a 15-point lead. And then as time went on, Vandy got closer and closer to about two-minute period, and I think it was only 3 points difference. Coach Dale Brown sent in Evans.
Wade Evans.
And it just so happened that right in front of us of the press table, that there's a more or less either a elbow or whatever you want to call it. He knocks down Jan Van Bredekoff. Some say it was just pushing or whatever, but and three times Wade Evans had knocked Jan Van, and then the LSU bench, all of them, I think it was 12 or 13 players, came running diagonally across and started piling on. Collis Temple hit Jan Van Bredekoff in the back. It may have caused a collapsed lung. So I don't know to me, but I, Olympic style, put one hand down on the breast table and jumped it and went out to try to start pulling the LSU players off of Jan Van Bredekoff. Well, you might know that I was having the security guards put my arms in the back up against the press table, and then Coach Dale Brown came over, and he was emotional, and he jerked the I had a three-piece suit on, and the vest he tore all three buttons off the vest, and the vest was falling down on the floor. But then he got real emotional, and he slugged me on both sides of the jaw. And I could feel it for 2 weeks. I had a sore jaw.
My goodness!
And then the next thing I know, they wheeled me out of the gym into a police car, and I go to jail. And of course, my God above, what have I done now? I was going to a ball game, and I wind up in the LSU jail, and so I had to spend the night in the jail. And Roy Skinner and the group didn't come to get me out, and they said the judge would not let the friends of ours to jail. So I had to spend the night in the jail. It was an unbelievable experience. It's never something that I'd never forget. But the next morning, thank goodness, Roy Skinner, I called him. They let me call him on the phone at the hotel, and he got JoJo Dean, and both of them came down to the jail, and then Roy posted a reconnaissance bond of $1,000 to get me out of jail. And then I flew home after going to the hotel where the players were, and talked to all of them. they were interested to know I was in jail. But then I caught the plane, flew home. Unbelievable now. I go to the private club, Nashville City Club, and the editor of the Nashville paper, a guy named Spark, and he says, "Bob, we're going to make a hero out of you." And I said, "Hero, hell, why in the world would you put my picture in handcuffs on the front page of the sports page? I can understand it happening in Baton Rouge, but why my own Nashville newspaper?" So, anyway, that was a bad situation, and we had to go down and visit with Stapleton was the athletic director, and Roy Skinner. I had to write a letter to Dale Brown, and then Dale called me after getting the letter, and he said, "Bob, I read your letter today, and of course, we had problems with the DA and
we were hopeful, my attorney, that we would be able to settle it. Well, I wouldn't have to go to court and all that and come down. But it couldn't be resolved, and so I had the situation that I had to go to court and be fined and just try to get it behind me. But it's been a lasting experience on me because I had one of the local freelance writers in Nashville to kind of being vulnerable that he wanted to write another article on the 40th anniversary of Vanderbilt playing LSU. And I told him I would appreciate it if he would not bring that up again, because I really, really was scarred of doing a crazy thing of going on the floor. And why is it fate had it that where we were at the press table that the fight would break out right there in front of me? And so some things just work strange. And so about 3 years ago, Dale Brown called my home phone. He had gotten the number from the Ron Bergazzi, one of the assistant basketball coaches. And he left a message. He said, I want to talk to the handsome, good-looking, great Vanderbilt basketball player, Bob Dudley Smith. This is Dale Brown. Well, I thought it was a prank, and I asked my wife to call Dale to see if that is correct. And sure enough, my wife said, yes, Dale Brown is on the phone. He wants to talk to you. Well, he told me he was sorry that it happened. He had been thinking about me. And he has been, since then, he's been sending me inspirational emails. He has talked to me on the phone. And we have developed a friendship now for the last 3 years. I have read many articles about him, and he's naturally traveled all over the world. He's a just tremendous individual, and I just care so much for him now. And my sons are very impressed with his great attitude, and he invited us to come and to be at the next Vanderbilt-LSU game.
And you'll be seated with Coach Brown, Wade Evans, and Collis Temple, I'm told. It will be quite a reunion.
Yes, and as I say, Dale Brown, he just thought it was great to invite my sons and me to come down. And he told me, he said, Bob, I want to invite Collis Temple and Jan Van. And we all have a nice recollection and forgiveness, and just that we feel better for each other and growing in a better, good attitude of relationship. And I just think the world of Dale Brown now. I just think he has got an attitude that he loves people. He's wanting to guide people in the right direction and do inspiring things, and anything is possible. I mean, he's just in tune with trying to get people to live with good morals and to try to do their best.
Well, we look forward to seeing you. Bob Dudley Smith, it's been a long time, but 44 years, you'll be shaking hands with Wade Evans, Collis Temple, and Dale Brown, and watching the Vanderbilt-LSU game. I suspect you'll be rooting for the Commodores.
A little bit, but of course, you know, to me, I was very lucky. I was a second scholarship player to Vanderbilt in 1948. I was a local boy, and I was a part of the first five scholarship players to Vanderbilt because we had no gymnasium. And luckily, our junior year, my teammates were so good that we won the SEC tournament, and one of my better games was against LSU in the semifinals. So I was lucky to be on those teams that really was the beginning of Vanderbilt basketball. So I have a great respect for LSU and JoJo Dean and all the friends that I've met through the years, and, of course, now my new best friend, Dale Brown, what he stands for and everything about him.
And that'll do it for today. We thank you for joining us. Tomorrow we'll have a few topics, including the 30th anniversary of the Jimmy Swaggart I Have Sinned sermon. For Sasha Kobashaw, I'm Jim Engstrom.
Today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.